Welcome, everyone. Welcome, ladles, and to a certain extent, jelly spoons. Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 35. We're joined by a voice you may recognise if you're a long-time listener. Luke has joined us again, which is it's nice to be three once more. How are you doing, Luke?
I'm good, thank you. Pleasure to be back.
Hooray! It's great. It's great to have more people on. Pete's here. My name's Ben, and we're going to crack in with our usual weekly update, which I think we might have missed last week because there was just two of us, and we'd gone, oh, what? Have we done anything?
We spoke about the summit a bit.
Oh yeah, because that was quite exciting. So Pete's summit arrived. Have you dug in any more?
Yes, I've really dug in now. Sort of really getting in. And as I suggested last week, it really is about the synergy between the two synths, sort of layered up or whatever configuration you want. But that's where the magic is with the summit.
Well, so the Peaks presets were famously terrible. Now, one of the Ians from the Modcaf deleted all of them as soon as he got his home. How have you found them on the summit? Have they redone everything, or they just ported the same
better,
over?
They're certainly better. But it is the magic of having the two, having two patches layered up, gives you the most interesting sort of kind of output from them.
Yeah. Nice one.
But as I said last week, I don't think you'd get the same magic if you just had two peaks together.
Not without considerable faffing, at least.
Yes, it's the way they integrate inside the one keyboard.
Pretty cool. Well, I do expect whenever we eventually have real Modcafs again, you're going to have to do the same thing as you did with the Poly Evolver, but just bring the Summit and Ultra effects again and take us through it, because that was a treat last time. Do you reckon you can do something like that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's what I was planning. And I also heard a rumour, I don't know if I should say, that there was...
Maybe we'll talk about it next week.
Okay.
There's a Modcaf rumour going around. We'll talk about it later. Luke, have you been up to anything interesting this week? Or last week, because it is a Monday.
Yes, it is. I'd like to say I have, but like most people, I imagine these days, no, I haven't been up to anything interesting. I've been exploring the depths of my Steam archive.
Oh, nice. Anything weird and unexpected that you didn't realise you'd ever bought?
Yeah. Well, actually, something that I did buy recently but didn't think I would enjoy, a factory game called Satisfactory.
Which is, yes, I've heard of it.
Excellently named, because it is anything but.
Wait, is that the like 3D FPS one?
Yeah, it's essentially Factorio, but with less drama, so I gather. I haven't played Factorio. But it's very fun. It involves a lot of maths and a lot of learning curve, and then once you get up to the top of that curve, you realise you've done everything wrong, and you have to actually go back and count and delete a lot of things. But it's fun, I think.
Yeah, well, at least there's a bit of depth to it if you realise you've been playing it all wrong. It's going to be, I'm going to chuck you in the deep end. Mm-hmm. What are your top five games that you can think of right now? Not like of all time, but just what's top on your list of stuff you've enjoyed recently?
Okay, so Halo has come to the PC, which is amazing. I'm reliving my inner 16-year-old.
Yes.
And probably 14-year-old, actually.
Favourite Halo game?
Favourite Halo? Three.
Three, nice.
Has to be. Maybe ODST.
Ooh.
Because I like the fragility.
Curveball.
Yeah. Ah. You know, it's nice not being the big tank man. It's nice being the regular guy with the regular gun. Yeah, Halo's definitely up there. Satisfactory is coming in too, because I'm playing it all the time at the moment. FTL has to go in on number three.
Yes,
because I spent a long time playing that, and ashamedly only really beat it once or twice on easy.
Well, no, same. I've beaten it by cheating quite a few times. Just give yourself the glaive beam and all the other
the
those ones.
If FTL hands you a beam.
You win.
Hang on to it for Grim Death.
Nice.
And probably just a little bit of Minecraft, maybe, but I haven't been playing that very recently. And
the last one.
What is the last one?
Ooh. Well, played anything super giant?
Yeah, Bastion is probably one of my all-time favourite games. A beautiful score, really well done, and just if you haven't played it, go and play it. It doesn't run particularly well on modern monitors because it's kind of capped to old frame per second settings, and it doesn't run in a very high resolution. But it's a beautiful game, and like hand-drawn art style is very nice, and it runs all the way through with this beautiful commentary delivered by a brilliant voice actor whose name escapes me.
No, I can never remember it, but it's great.
Yeah, it's just one of those real memorable little hack and slash games with a story that's larger than what you would think in a game that small and that indie would deliver. It's good.
Definitely a great one. Actually, one of the ones that kind of got me into more of the RPG style stuff, because I was just playing a lot of FPS before I visited that one. Nice one. So Steam's doing well for you. Unfortunately, I've done absolutely nothing interesting. I've been preparing to move, so I'm swimming in boxes and paper and wrapping materials and trying to figure out how to hire a van at the moment. But we'll get through that. Should be fun.
So what date have you got for your move?
Not next weekend, but the one after that. So I've got a nice 4 or 5 day thing to just really get stuck in. get the van for a couple of days. I'm not looking forward to it at all. There is a very wide staircase, though, so getting the table and the sofa and things around shouldn't be too horrible. Although the sort of studio desk I have is wider than I am tall, so that's going to be fun. I have to dismantle that.
Well, it'll be all over when it's over.
Yep, I can't wait. Oh, moving utilities. Anyway, I'm not looking forward to that. But what I am looking forward to is digging into a couple of these modular things we've got on our docket for the day. Before we jump into the one that I actually totally forgot about and Pete has reminded us exists, I ran across one on YouTube just yesterday.
Now, where you can watch all manner of things.
All manner of things. So this was a YouTube channel that has about 5 subscribers, so I think I'm pretty lucky that it turned up in my recommendations, to be honest. And as I rapidly attempt to scroll through YouTube faster than I'm talking, as always seems to happen to me, I will find out that I don't remember what the guy's name is at all. So I'm just going to quickly go over to Chrome and remember that it's OK200. Which is not really a memorable name, so you'll forgive me for completely forgetting it. This module is called the Degree Plus 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 Plus. So I can only imagine it's just the Degree with some plus and just Degree. Now, this is a performance VCO controller, and we'll show people the picture. You got 2 kind of sections in here. On the left-hand side, we've got a bunch of sort of the outputs. You have 4 sets of everything, because this is designed to drive 4 oscillators, so you can control 4 pitches at once. So it's obviously going for, let's make chords a thing in Eurorack. Now, what's really cool is the right-hand section, which is the hands-on performance kind of section. You have 8 LEDs in a column. Each of them has a copper surround, which is sort of integrated into the circuit. So these little LEDs, you touch them and it is a button in that sense. It doesn't move, obviously, but conductive things. So you press the lights and it does stuff. In the middle, you've got 8 switches that let you turn on and off certain degrees of the scale. So they are marked 1, 2, 8. And I am not too sure about the sort of nitty-gritty, because it's still in development. But you've got slew controls per channel. But I really recommend you watch the video. I will post a link to the video on the Facebook sort of shared post for this particular episode, so you can go and have a look at it. But it's ok200.ca if you want to take a look at the website. And the controller is Degree. You just have to watch the video. It's a really interesting way of navigating 4 different VCOs and making chord progressions. And it's because it's touch sensitive and it's got sort of all these little copper surrounds everywhere. It's really interactive, and the guy did quite a nice performance just to demonstrate how it works. It's really big, and on the website it says small batch order request form, so I don't think you can really get your hands on it these days. But take a look at that video. If you've got a giant system like you do, Pete,
yes,
that might be interesting. Another interesting sequencer-y, chord controller-y, quantizer-y something.
I know he's got 11 subscribers now, so it's...
There we go.
It's almost doubled.
He's doing well.
He's on the money.
It only has like 3 videos, but that most recent one is a really great demo. So I think it's still in development. I'm excited to see how it grows.
How it pans out.
It's a really interesting concept. Now to a slightly more established one. What have you found for us, Pete?
Yes, so the Qubit Surface is now available. This was announced at NAMM at the beginning of the year. But
I instantly forgot about it somehow.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's been delayed particularly, but I know that it was announced just last week that it's now become available. And I've checked around. There's a few stores that actually have stock, and the rest of them are saying pre-orders available. And I'm quite interested. It's flagged as a digital oscillator, but it has polyphony, but not how you would expect to have Polyphony potentially.
So physical modelling and a lot of those kind of voices, like Rings, Elements, 2HP's Pluck and Bell, they have that sort of overlapping style of Polyphony. So if you just have the decay up long enough,
It's similar to that, but it's actually much more effective. It will, as you strike the next note, it will be still playing the previous note. So it actually works quite well, and you can actually set it to the amount of polyphony that you want to, up to 8.
One thing I've always found with that kind of thing is if you have a burst generator sent into a random looping sequencer like a Turing machine, you can get really nice chord strums, which is always a fun way of using those.
I mean, I've heard it described as it's sort of how they would want Rings to actually be.
Yeah, because Rings isn't amazing. It goes out of tune quite a lot.
Whereas this is much more stable. Mm. It also gets into the percussive areas. There's a lot more sounds that it can or sound it can generate. Or physically model, I should say.
Oh yes, of course. I've always liked Qubit stuff. It's presented really well. They seem really open to use. They're not any of those modules with so many functions. All the potentiometers are crammed next to each other, and you can't get your fingers in there. Like the Nano Rings, those are always a nightmare.
They do seem to have really opened up their offering. They've got way more modules.
Oh yes.
There's still a few more that are pending. So
from the same batch, I think, that they're still waiting on.
Yes.
From NAMM.
But they now offer a reasonable range, because they only had the, the granular sampler.
Nebulae V2.
Yes, that was their first offering, and that was all they were offering for quite a time. But they've really bolstered their, their selection of modules.
The Chord has had a second version kind of recently. That one's kind of cool as well, digital Chord generator.
I'm something of a synthesizer layman, as I'm sure you know, but I'm always excited to hear what something that says it's going to create entirely new worlds of sound actually sounds like. That sounds impressive.
I think that's a bit overkill.
I think that's a bit of marketing.
Yeah.
But
it would sound good, but I don't think it's going to be anything we haven't heard before. It just might be a nice way of interacting with it compared to some of the other methods that we've got available right now.
There are a few demos out there, and it does sound very Rings-ish in part, but everyone was that was demoing was pretty happy about the whole situation. Thought it was a good module.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of tempted, because I was thinking about buying another Rings for the live setup.
Yeah,
this
might be some
better. This looks
variety.
Like possibly a better option. I think it's just a bit more. Rings is a bit ambiguous. Ambiguous, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, I had the factory one, which I then sold, regretted, and bought a Nano one, which I sold and then didn't regret. It's when you change they have one control which I think is sort of the model kind of control, so it goes from bells to something like you've slapped a bit of wood on a desk or something, makes that kind of sound. But if you've tuned it in the bell kind of sound, you've tuned it to a nice C and it sounds perfect, you tune it around to the wooden slap and it's just gone completely out. So I found it quite unusable.
Well, that's with
that
the buttons.
Way.
You press the buttons and on the each, because it's two oscillators, isn't it, effectively?
No, it's not that bit. It's if you're in if you're still within one of those modes, but just going through that one control that takes you from one extreme end of that model to the other.
Okay.
It goes really strange, and it happens within all the separate modes. I just found it a nightmare.
Yeah, so I think this one is a bit more solid.
Yeah, hopefully they will have learnt from certain frustrations.
So, I mean, nearly ordered one at the weekend. I mean, it's not the UK price.
You're just kind of extrapolating from the
well, no, that's the actual price
the
I've actually seen it on. The okay. $299 is on the Qubit site itself.
Oh, yeah.
The
we're not doing well with
the
American pricing,
yeah,
are
the
we?
272 UK pounds. I can't remember. It was one of the retailers that actually had stock.
Mm.
I tend to ignore ones that don't have it. So I can't remember who it was that had.
Who knows? It'll be on the internet.
Yes.
Erica Synths. When they say legacy, Eurorack DIY is open source. What counts as legacy?
Have they stopped doing DIY? All the ones they did as DIY originally?
Maybe. I think on Thonk it was just kind of residual stock is what we have. So maybe they're, I think they're things that's in the techno system, so the sample drum and all the slightly higher tech ones, they're staying as they were.
There's a list there of all
the ones. Yeah, I'm totally blind. So it's anything you could have got from Thonk. I suppose it would be up to individual sellers to actually offer the kits now then.
Yeah, and we've seen, I don't know, that's how the third party sort of mutable type designs, are they open source now or how?
They've always been open source, as far as I'm aware, so it would be up to people using the files to get their own PCBs made. And
yeah, and they're all on GitHub, so they're sort of everything from the bill of materials right through to the Gerber files for the circuit.
Is Gerber just like EagleCAD type alternative or something?
I would imagine so. So Gerber files for front panel, okay, so that's the layout of the front panel, right. Sort of holes, and I think it might even have the screen printing if you wanted to go that far.
So. If you have that kit in your home office, why not? Actually, one thing that is really cool, the Swamp. I've watched, there was a demo by the synth DIY guy, Kinkas. That's a really interesting module if you want really slow sort of random modulation. That's quite a cool one.
Well, as I say, their take on the Wobble Bug, which is a 1970s design, isn't it? It's a West Coast design.
So that might have something to do with Buchla.
Yes, I believe it does. And you can see the Polyvox stuff as well, again. So they're saying it's open source, but surely some of these designs weren't theirs in the first place.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, Polyvox, maybe the company that originally made that has just been gone for a very long time, I imagine.
Yes, I mean, there's quite a few. There's several other manufacturers that do Polyvox. So the Harvestman does Polyvox, and I'm sure I've seen a few others that do it as well.
There's more even in Erica's own lineup. Like there's a Pico filter that's Polyvox inspired as well.
So I believe, I can remember, the Polyvox is certainly sort of Soviet Union area.
Yeah, probably going after whichever Moog was available at the time.
Yeah, so 1980s.
Yeah, I know it's been on a lot of the Doom soundtrack, I think. The name's just gone. Who's the guy who did the Doom soundtrack?
Mick Gordon.
Mick Gordon, yeah. I'm pretty sure Mick Gordon has one.
You can get them. Occasionally you see an original come up on eBay.
So with this being open source, then, especially with considering the Polyvox, is that just a case of there isn't any copyright any longer on
imagine
this stuff,
so.
Or there wasn't any to begin with?
Well, if it's Russian, I guess maybe there wasn't. Who knows?
Yeah, where everyone's just ignoring it. I mean, this community is very sort of generally very generous in respect.
That's true. Yeah,
and there's this very much sort of sharing type of thing. But as I say, a lot of designs are rehashes from designs from the 1970s, so even if they were patented, that patent might have lapsed by now.
Yeah.
Famously, Bob Moog only patented one thing, which was his ladder filter, and everything else was just...
Yeah, there's a certain filter that you can get, which is a clone of the ARP 2600 filter that had a lawsuit kind of going on around it originally. So that one that you can get for Eurorack now is a clone of a clone of a clone? No, just a clone of a clone. So it can go quite deep.
Yeah, so I mean, it's something that caught my eye. I don't know if that really is going to change things, or maybe some third parties are going to take these files and produce some sort of super cheap kits.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. I like the Erica stuff, although the only... that envelope, that Polyvox envelope, is the only module that I've ever not successfully built myself. But it was a nice kit. I swear I still like you, Erica Synths. Don't hurt me.
Just on that subject, I was going to mention that my Lyra 8 kit has turned up.
Whoa.
So I believe it was 5 weeks from somewhere in Russia. I don't know.
It could be worse.
That's not bad at all, really, considering what's going on these days with deliveries.
I got stung a bit for import, but it wasn't too bad.
Not too bad.
It all went through quite smoothly, because I'd been watching out, and it had left Russia, and then there was this big sort of four-week nothing.
Yeah.
And then suddenly Parcelforce had it, and it had turned up the next day.
Nice.
So I've got the joy of... getting the bill of materials for that, which is going to prove interesting.
So the kit that you got, was it just slightly weird parts and then PCBs, and that was it?
Well, I say slightly. There's 5 PCBs altogether.
No, really? I thought it was just kind of a couple.
Well, big some sandwich. Of them are some more like user shield, so they got full. They're not etched, so it's the same. It's circuit board per se, and then it's got the copper surface on one side, but it's used as a shield. There are two surface mount chips, but they weren't. I've got to solder them on, so that would be interesting. Everything else is pretty chunky through hole stuff. Yeah.
That should be cool.
So, I'll carefully build up the bill of materials before I do anything, make sure I've got everything and spares.
And looking forward to that. And once it's alive, we might have to force you and Ben from the ModCaf to do a Lyra 8 off, because he's got one now. So it'd just be a huge drone fest battling each other with sonic death.
So
something equally dramatic.
What I'm assuming about the whole the contacts at the bottom, which you use to initiate or trigger it, or whatever you want to describe it, the two circles, you're making contact with your skin.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that until I actually got the kit and went, okay, they're just little metal things.
So did it give you the little posts?
No, you don't get any of that. Oh. You've got the two circuit. You've got the main circuit board, which is I want to say, I don't know, about 1/16 of an inch or a millimetre and a half or something like that. You know, the usual sort of circuit board kind of thickness. And then there's the board that all the control surface goes on. It's really quite thin. It's made of the same material. And there are sort of circuitry on it, but it's really thin. Mm. It's almost...
Does it wobble?
Yeah, it's almost wobbly. And all the pots kind of bolt through it, to it, and then they protrude through whatever faceplate that you construct. And they haven't given you much in the way of instructions. They said that it's basically not a kit for first-timers.
Yeah. So I was about to make that comment, actually. I'll ask, yeah.
We're not going to give you any... There's no instructions, per se. We'll just show you a bill of materials, talk about a few bits and pieces you've got to be careful about, and show you some photographs of what one of our Lyra 8s looks like.
Yeah, I know there's a pretty chunky post on Muffwiggler that's got a lot of sort of people's experience through the DIY thing. I think most people did find it reasonably straightforward.
Oh, and no help with fault finding.
Oh, yeah. None of that.
None of that.
Not like Bafaco have helped you out.
No, none of that happy ending or whatever.
the happy ending service that you get from Bafaco is pretty cool. If you fail when you're doing a build, you can just send it to them, they'll fix it, get it back to
that's
you.
Very nice.
It's really cool. And, of course, it's called Happy Ending, which is hilarious. Yeah. Right. That exhausts our usual synthesizery-type stuff. Now, we have a bit of a space enthusiast with us. Luke.
Who? What, me?
You, a space enthusiast.
Oh, yes, sorry, I did forget. I am the giant space nerd.
We've got some stuff in the news that I don't keep up with, but is still very much interesting. Take us through it. What's been happening in the world of space, SpaceX, NASA, various other people that do things in the...
And
the
generally
the empty bit.
Yeah, anywhere but here.
Yeah.
Yes. So just the other day, we had the launch of the Perseverance rover mission to Mars, scheduled to land on the Red Planet on the 18th of February 2021. So obviously, it's quite a long journey.
It could be worse.
Yeah, it's a nice peaceful voyage through the empty black on the way to its very fiery and traumatic descent, which hopefully will go off without a hitch.
Hopefully.
It's a very interesting descent stage they're using. It's very similar to what they used for the Curiosity rover. They're going to be using a sky crane system. They essentially will air brake through the atmosphere, the very thin atmosphere that is there. It's good enough for air braking, but not good enough to breathe or sustain any sort of life. The landing craft will pause in midair and then lower the drone via a sky crane, using the thrusters of the landing craft itself to maintain altitude, and then gently lower the rover itself down onto the surface, at which point the crane will be disconnected and the landing craft will shoot off and crash somewhere safely far away from our very expensive rover.
Yeah.
So that's very exciting to see, because we didn't really have a huge amount of onboard cameras when it came to the Curiosity landing, which was very similar, although we did
obviously... Are they planning more cameras for this?
Yeah, there's going to be...
Well, I say they're planning, it's gone already.
It has gone, yes.
Hopefully
they didn't forget. So we'll see. I mean, I'm not optimistic, because always a lot of this stuff is very difficult. A lot of it's automated. You're never really going to get good quality video from that far away, you know, and certainly we won't see it for a little bit of time. But it's very exciting, so that's going to be its trial by fire, if you will. And of course, if you've ever actually looked into this stuff, Mars rovers have about a 50 to 60% success rate in terms of making a successful landing. So that's it's not, the odds aren't there, but you know, they've been getting better and better. Certainly all of the recent rovers have landed well and continued to operate.
Yeah. What's Curiosity up to at the moment? Because I apart from Curiosity's landed, that's all I really noticed when that was all going down.
So the Curiosity mission is essentially the new mission, Perseverance, is going to take on a lot of what Curiosity was kind of looking at, but we're sending better tools, more powerful lasers, better cameras, 2020 technology, basically, rather than what we sent with Curiosity, which has been on Mars for about six or seven years now.
Oh, really?
To double check.
Time flies.
I think it was 2014.
Yes. Oh, yeah. 2014. So it'll be about just come up to 6 years. So Curiosity's basically been looking at geology. It's been searching for some signs of life, but the whole point of Perseverance is we're going to be taking some of those testing mechanisms and improving them. So Perseverance's main mission is to test core rock samples for evidence of past bacterial microbial life. Mm-hmm. So we're looking for bacterial fossils.
Nice.
Which is very exciting. I don't know whether that's going to turn up anything, but certainly it will give us some clues to the ancient geology of Mars, because again, these drills and these sample kits are going to be a lot more powerful and robust than what Curiosity was equipped with. We're also going to be testing the chemistry of the Martian landscape to see if we can manufacture oxygen out of any of it. Mm-hmm. Again, we have a good idea of what's there in terms of mass spectrometry. We can see what sort of chemicals and hydrocarbons and stuff are present on the surface. But again, it's just going to be taking some of those tests a step further and see if we can actually implement some of the possible methods for generating oxygen out there, which is going to be very exciting because it will have an impact on whether or not we can send, well, it will certainly inform how we would send humans to Mars.
I remember you saying when we were at work the other day, this might be the, if it happens, this would be the first time we could ever get actual samples back.
Yeah, so that's the sort of tertiary concern. This one, I've not really seen this so much on the NASA site, but it's something I've been reading around the web. And what they're planning to do basically is store a lot of these samples in little drop-off caches as Perseverance makes its way around the dust basin it's going to land in. And they're going to then follow that up with another automated mission where they'll send a craft capable of landing on the surface and sending up a little drone back up into the atmosphere that will eventually rendezvous with a further follow-up mission in Mars orbit that will then send those samples back to Earth. And the very interesting part of that is that if all that works, and that will be many years in the future... Well, not that many, but certainly not tomorrow. the very interesting thing about that is they're going to be able to compare direct Mars samples with asteroids.
Sort of remote stuff as well.
Yeah, but also with asteroids and rocks that we think that have landed on Earth that were from Mars. Things that will have essentially landed on the Earth's crust or come up to the surface of the Earth during tectonic change. Things that have landed on here because of collisions or in the forming of the solar system. So that's going to be very exciting. So we can actually compare how Mars's geology has changed over years, because obviously the rocks that we have on Earth currently are very, very old.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas what we're finding on the surface of Mars will have been weathered, been there for less time because it will have moved around and so on. And importantly, because Mars doesn't have any tectonic activity of any sort anymore, we think, it's going to show us a lot about whether or not those chemicals are abundant or not. So it's going to be very exciting if you're into geology, which I am as far as astrobiology is concerned.
Yeah. No, it's always been a source of amazement how much you can kind of infer just from actually really small bits of data, but how much you can actually glean from the past, even just here on Earth, talking just in regular archaeology. It's amazing. Totally
indeed.
Alien field to me.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point of sending Perseverance, because we have to do a great deal of inferring in astrobiology, in astronomy. And the better quality evidence you have, the less of a stretch those inferences are. So, again, if we can get samples into Perseverance, we can analyze them with better tools, we can make better inferences. If we can send those samples back to Earth, we can make better inferences. So it's going to help improve our understanding of our solar system, and in particular the red planet. Just to relate it back to music briefly, obviously.
Ooh, hello.
When we sent Curiosity for its first birthday, the mission controller team did something very special, and this has made obviously Curiosity very famous, and you may be aware of it. But they used some of the testing equipment to they would move it in a certain way so it would generate a tone. in the Martian atmosphere, and using the microphones on Curiosity, they essentially move the testing equipment in such a way as to make it play Happy Birthday to itself.
That's so
which
sad.
Which I think is just, well, yeah,
so lonely.
It's very lonely. But I think it speaks to the tremendous,
it shows the kind of the passion behind the teams that kind of put all this together.
Yeah, I just think it's really cute and beautiful to see that we're doing something so silly with billions of dollars of equipment far, far away from home. So if Perseverance can accomplish a similar feat, we'll expand our interplanetary
orchestra.
Repertoire. Yes. Yeah.
So you reckon that's the first interplanetary single?
Perhaps. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe. You know, it could be a duo, a collaboration between Curiosity and Perseverance. That could be fun.
Yeah. So harmonization.
But yeah, it's all first steps on that long road, you know, to testing what the surface is like in more detail and seeing what we could possibly do once we get there in person. Whether that will happen or not in our lifetime is another matter, but it's certainly exciting.
Yeah, definitely.
And one thing I believe they're also doing, which is mainly for proof of concept, is that there is a drone attached to the other side of the vehicle, and they plan to fly it. It will be the first air vehicle flown on any other planet.
Yes. It's called Ingenuity. Yes, it's this tiny little Mars helicopter. They've been testing it in this simulated gravity chamber on Earth, where essentially they put it in a big tube, they pump out a load of the air, and they put it on a string and dangle it around to simulate
high tech.
Yes, to simulate lower weight, lower mass.
What are we talking? Nowadays, when everyone says drone, I think quadcopter. But what kind of thing is it?
I've seen a picture of it. It's best to give it a Google because it's kind of hard to describe. But watch it on YouTube.
Here we go.
But it's kind of like it's very much something out of a 60s sci-fi. If I remember correctly, it's a sort of pyramid thing with helicopter blades above
it. Yeah, it's got the, I don't know what the technical name, but it's got the opposing blade. So the blade, it's got two...
Oh, the contra-rotating
thing. Yeah, contra-rotating, that's exactly it. That's what I was searching for. The contra-rotating...
From my brief sojourn in model helicopters.
Carbon fiber blade. So it's ultra-lightweight. They were talking about various ways of keeping it cool because they've got to... allow it to survive the Martian night, which is extremely cold, and then the heating up during the day.
It does look very homemade.
Yeah, the pictures. So they're actually using, I can't remember, they're using gas to actually insulate it.
Oh, really?
They had thought about the
aero... It's like tin foil to me.
Yeah, well, that's the external, that's just the heat reflection. But they were talking about aerogel, and that was too heavy.
Aerogel was too heavy?
Yeah.
What?
Well, this is all about looking at home, very homemade as well. It's impressive, isn't it? Because you have to remember, I think, with all this space stuff, it's all very much made to order. This is not we're not pulling designs out of our peripherals. it's innovation really in literal form, which is very exciting. But it also makes it look like something put together in a shed, because I guess it is. It's just a very expensive shed,
the most expensive
with
shed.
Very smart people inside it,
and because of the time lag, they can't directly control it, so they have to pre-program it. So again, this one's just a proof of concept. So if they can get it to fly, all well and good. And I believe it's going to have some sensory apparatus and maybe some cameras on it, so we'll get some sort of something back other than just telemetry from it.
Yeah. But that's hopefully going to inform another mission that's going on. I can't remember exactly where. I think it's in Saturn or Jupiter's moons. They want to fly a quadcopter out to, I think it's Europa, because why not?
Because you can. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. I only find, and this one's not too bad because it's a 6-7 month wait, isn't it, before it lands. But some of the long ones, the one that was the mission to Pluto that seemed to take, I remember it launching initially, and they were saying, oh, it's going to arrive, I can't remember, was it last year, the year before, I can't remember. It's a few years since the Pluto flypast, isn't it?
Yeah.
The time flies, but it seemed like forever. I was thinking, God, that's 13, 14 years away or something like that.
Well, yes, and we've only really just had high-def pictures come back fairly recently. It was the New Horizons probe.
Yes.
And
there was a very good documentary about that, I want to say about 2 weeks ago on the BBC. And they're going into extraordinary detail about what they found. And as usual with the things they found, lots of things they weren't expecting to find, which is... more to list than we can list here.
Indeed. Yeah. There's so much out there. We occupy a very small corner of it all, and it's very exciting to finally send our little robots out to have a peek. But it unfortunately does take a long time to get that information. Well, to get the little robots out there and then to get the information back here takes a long time.
Totally. Since I'm not an educated space enthusiast, my my interest in this kind of stuff obviously comes from the corner of science fiction, top sci-fi films, because I've thought of a list of classics that, that people just generally need to see.
Oh, this is
I want to see if I'm missing anything. Because obviously, you know, 2001, Alien, Independence Day, because it's a laugh. I think Arrival needs to stay on that list. I thought that was an incredible film.
Absolutely.
The Martian's a bit of fun. What was my last one? Oh no! Oh yeah. No,
do you
it's
want to describe
gone.
Who's in it?
No, because I can't remember.
Oh dear.
Far away. What have you guys got? I'll try and think of what it was.
Do you want to go first, or shall I? I don't mind.
I would have to say Blade Runner.
Oh
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely,
and possibly the certainly the first one. There's a certain.
I wasn't big on the recent one.
I enjoyed it. I think the Villeneuve, who directed it, stated it was the same universe through a different person's eyes.
It was. He's now doing the new Dune.
Yes.
There it is.
Yeah.
Dune, the original one.
The
1980. What do I want to say? 84.
Yes.
Dune.
What was the guy? The director.
David Lynch.
David Lynch. Yes. Who could forget?
And that old David Lynch stuff has got a certain.
Je ne sais quoi.
To it. Yeah, I don't know if you were ever a fan of Twin Peaks.
I haven't actually watched Twin Peaks. I've been told to watch it many times by a close friend of mine, our dear Ed, if you know.
Oh,
Ed.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I need to do that. It's on my list.
Yeah, that was a bizarre one, and that was that's 1980s as well. And then they did a kind of, because there was two series, I believe, and then they did a third series two or three years ago. Just as weird. Everything that David Lynch does is strange.
Stark. It has an interesting style to it. Stylistically, one of my favourite films, sci-fi. My problem is that I love sci-fi. It's very close to my heart, but I don't like a lot of sci-fi films because they either ruin it or they don't do it properly.
Yeah.
But certainly some of them really do. And one of them that I love is very dear to my heart is the adaptation of Philip K. Dick's A Scanner Darkly.
Mm.
It's a brilliant sci-fi film. It's mostly really about interpersonal relationships and drug abuse and things and how addiction can affect you. But it's filmed using old-school rotoscopy. So they film a real film and they draw over it and it gives the whole thing this really, really spacey quality. Music's great as well. I'd thoroughly encourage people to watch that.
I believe it's supposed to be one of the most faithful of his...
it's almost word for word, yeah. The dialogue is pretty much lifted from the
book.
Whereas
Blade Runner, which was derived from Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, was really kind of rejigged by Ridley Scott.
Mm. I think he did a good job. I think if you were going to modify it to bring it to a contemporary audience, then the original Blade Runner is fine.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really do a disservice to Androids, but I prefer the book. But then it's still nice to see all those environments on the big screen, isn't it? You know.
Yes.
Just to clarify and crystallize it in your imagination.
Yeah.
But I haven't actually read the book, but I know many people who haven't described it. I believe the premise of the book
is slightly different.
It's completely different in some respects.
It is. It's not. It's a whole lot more existential and it's executed better in my mind. But again, I still think they did a good job. You can kind of think of it as like a parallel universe if you want, you know.
I believe the original Blade Runner is regarded as one of the best films ever made. Mm. Not just on the science fiction level, on just generally on the level of a film.
Yeah, Harrison Ford at his peak certainly, and the other actors did a great job, and it's, you know, well costumed and well designed.
And it's aged well.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the predictions are sort of off, is it 2017?
Well, Dick does very well with things like communication, internet, existentialism. But one of the things he just didn't get was the humble monitor, you know, computer screens.
Yeah.
They're there in the car, but they're never multiple use items. They're always like you have a readout for this, or you get handed your mission on a piece of paper that comes out of your car. It's all very cyberpunk and dystopian, but it misses the humble monitor that we're so used to, the touchscreen, the multifunction device. It's not really in these.
Can you think of any films, older sci-fi, anything that predicted that kind of thing?
Oof, there must be one, but nothing springs to mind.
It seems to go from one extreme to the other. So they would go wildly over-optimistic about some technologies that never come to fruition, and other ones they completely ignore or don't get it. And then sometimes they sort of just nail it. It's a difficult call.
I have to give an honourable mention on a slightly different note to a film, a small budget film that I watched recently. Again, with sci-fi, often these sort of homebrew builds are way better than the big budget ones. I Am Mother, it's a Netflix film I watched recently. It's a really interesting little film about the end of the human race and essentially a robot raises a child in a kind of underground bunker. And it, again, questions relationships and things in a very sci-fi way. But very beautifully done, and a lot of the special effects are practical effects.
Oh, nice.
Rather than CGI, and I think it's just brilliant. Really good film. I quite enjoyed it, and not what I was expecting from a small Australian production house with just two actors, or two or three actors, I think, are in the film.
Again, nice. What was it called? I Am Mother.
I Am Mother, yeah.
Nice, might give that a look.
I'm also very excited to see if I could be permitted to waffle a bit longer.
Please do. That's why we've got you.
Indeed.
We love the waffle.
One of my all-time favourite novel series is being adapted, but it hasn't happened yet, and obviously the present climate has made all that stuff take a lot longer than it normally would. But if you've ever read any Ian M. Banks, the Culture series...
No way, are they doing that?
Apparently.
I've only read two of them, but it's amazing.
Yes, I encourage you to read all of them, but yeah. I also encourage you to take your time, because he's not writing anymore, bless him. The first novel, Consider Phlebas, is being adapted for an Amazon
series. I've read them in the
series.
Wrong order, but anyway.
Well, yes. Well, you're not. It's an odd one, and this is for the real. This is for the real hardcore out there. But if you know, Consider Phlebas is not necessarily regarded as the best place to start anyway.
Right.
Even though it is the first and the first chronologically.
Accession.
Oh, that's a bit of a mind.
I think that's where I started. I don't know why.
Tricky.
I think it was just given to me. It was great, though. It did take me a long time to power through.
It's a big book.
It's good.
Yeah, very good book. Very big book. Very lots of going
very
on.
Purple.
I'd go with, if you haven't read it yet, I'd go for Use of Weapons.
So that's one I read second.
Yeah, what did you think of that?
I can't remember. I read it so long ago. I just remember really enjoying it.
It's a very good book.
Yeah. I need to get it on the Kindle and I'll power through again.
Yeah, very good payoff at the end.
Especially if it's going to be adapted, I'll want to be disappointed in the
usual
way.
So they're adapting the first book, Consider Phlebas, Amazon doing it. Mm. It's been in production for a couple of years now and we haven't heard anything. But it's very exciting. It's a very, very realistic take on... A sci-fi universe. Can't wait to see that on the big screen, but there is a lot of fear in the fandom that they're going to do away with a lot of the progressivism that Ian Banks is famous for. Again, writing in the 80s kind of predicted a lot of things like LGBTQ and so on, and predicted a lot of the idea of just a lot of things that we consider strange becoming very normal, such as drug use or so on. Just lots of different areas where we think future societies might diverge from modern society. There's a worry that Amazon might sanitize some of that.
Yeah.
There's a worry that they might make it too blatant. We're not sure. But it's going to be very exciting to see it on the big screen.
Totally. I mean, if anyone's got enough money to do something properly, if we're lucky, Amazon might be the people to do it.
So could you describe them as a broadcaster, because Apple are in the same game as Netflix.
They're getting it, aren't they?
So they are producing the Isaac Asimov Foundation series.
That's another series that I started four times and still haven't got through the first book. I've tried so hard. It's one of my dad's favourites, but I just can't get through it.
It's a brilliant one, but I've only read the. I've got the omnibus on my shelf, but I've only read Prelude to Foundation, the prequel that he wrote after. But very much enjoyed that, and I'm very excited to see. What's the guy's name who's playing Selden? He was in The Expanse. He was in.
He was in the Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
He was Moriarty in the.
Yes, that guy whose name I've never actually known anyway, but I can picture his face right now.
Yeah. His father was a famous actor as well. Hold on, we'll get it.
So Apple's what are they doing? Like a Netflixy, Amazon Primey streaming service type?
Yeah, they're all in the same media game now, aren't they? They're all playing in the same.
They're going to do Foundation.
Yes, and some of the artwork and some of the sort of.
Jared Harris, Chernobyl.
Yeah.
Yes,
wouldn't have called it.
Some of the artwork and some of the things I've seen, it's just lush, really gorgeous. It's there's a lot of talk about, because obviously they're making the remake of Dune.
Mm-hmm. Who's doing that, by the way?
As in the director?
Yeah. I mean, companies, directors.
I can't pronounce his name, but Villeneuve, the same guy that did
Arrival.
Yeah, Arrival. And
Oh, it's going to be good then.
Yeah.
Arrival's amazing.
But the stuff that I've seen for the Foundation is... considering it's for TV, looks just as gorgeous as the stuff for June.
Any dates?
2021,
maybe.
Which seems like they've really moved very fast on that in terms of filming, production, SFX. I mean, it depends on obviously how much content we get released on day one.
How far they got through before it was announced.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of production has been re-established. I don't know about the sort of the acting side, but certainly post-production stuff, they can do that individually. That can be done. People can, as long as they've got a decent enough workstation, they can get access to the sort of...
certainly, you know, the analog bits, the filming that's an issue right
now.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure how far they've got with that side of it, but... I mean, there's obviously been a delay in a lot of scheduling, but and they've banked a lot of film companies have banked a lot of the releases, haven't they? Because they're just not going to
issues with cinemas and things as well.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a big part of their industry. It's now going to be straight to DVD, basically, which is the film's worst nightmare usually.
Yeah.
Or straight to stream, as it were.
Oh, welcome to the music industry, film people.
Well, I mean, you've. Netflix and your Amazon and now Apple and whoever, all these other players, I mean, the amount of money that they invest in some of these TV productions is equal to major film.
Well, it's the golden age of TV, isn't it? You know, that's what they say. Alex Turner said so on his most recent record.
Most probably the whole... I'm not an expert on this in this area, but you can imagine the whole cinema thing is a bit fickle, really. You know, you get the sort of... you mismatch, sort of time it and release something and it clashes with something else.
Yeah.
And or there's some sort of... Obviously a major event like a pandemic.
Yeah, imagine something else being released at the same time as Infinity War. It's ruined.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I still haven't seen it, and I don't care.
Speaking of the game industry, a lot of people were upset to find that Cyberpunk had moved back to the November 17th release date, Cyberpunk 2077.
So when was it supposed to be out?
It was going to be just recently now in July, but they pushed it back to November 17th, and a lot of developers who had been breathing sighs of relief because they were going to get their game in before are now a bit upset again.
Yeah.
Because they'll probably be passed over, but that's life.
It does look pretty cool. I have sort of kept up with all the new trailers that are sort of coming out from that, bits of gameplay.
Very exciting.
It's pretty cool. Not that I'll probably be playing it anyway, because I'm still trying 112% Hollow Knight. Oh my God. I think actually I did mention getting a Switch and playing Hollow Knight many, many episodes ago, early into lockdown. Originally, 100% completion, pretty obvious, but then they added DLC, so to complete it properly... It's 112% now, and I've got two boss rushes left. They're really kicking my ass. It's bad.
Indeed. I'll be excited to see what kind of instruments appear on the roster for Cyberpunk when it comes out. I imagine we'll see a lot of the sort of thing that you guys like to talk about on this show.
Ooh, that's a good point. There could potentially be a very interesting soundtrack to talk about there.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know who's done it?
I don't know, but I do know that CDPR spend a lot of time on their soundtrack. For instance, when they did the Witcher 3 game, they
actually
got... Of course,
it's the people that made the Witcher. Yes, I did know
that,
really.
They did get people in who played medieval instruments who had real, you know, replicas or restored instruments. And they were played in a traditional way, in a traditional Slavic manner as well. So they were very careful to actually get some real-sounding, authentic stuff in there. So we can only hope that when it comes to their new big thing, there's going to be a lot of cool cyberpunk sounding synthesizers.
Yeah.
And
well,
and
I mean, Richard Devine is involved, so we're in. If you ever come across him on Instagram, it's just walls of the stuff of flashing LEDs anywhere. But we've got this from CD Projekt's website. They've got kind of a list of people that are involved in some capacity. So many of these names I don't know. Run the Jewels, Refused, Grimes, ASAP, Rocky with a dollar sign as an S. I sound old there. Gazelle Twin, Ian Rubin, Island Rubin, don't know. Richard Devine, Nina Kravitz, Deadly Hunter, Rat Boy, Tina Guo or something.
I think a lot of them are collaborating. I've heard some of the Refused tracks already. They're going to be playing some of the music for a band that's heavily involved in the main story, and it already sounds like they're sort of blending the kind of 80s rock with that kind of 80s synth wave. It's going to be very cool. I'm very excited to hear it.
Yeah, should be good. There hasn't really been anything at all in the gameplay from what I remember. It was just all kind of engine sound. Actual game sound. I can't remember.
I've not. I can't. I know I've heard those. So they've used some of the tracks from the main. Again, they've used some of the Refused tracks, but they're not particularly synth heavy. There is some, like I say, some evidence of collaboration. It's going to be cool, I think.
Yeah.
But the environmental sound will be where it's at, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because from my memory of watching sort of the various reveal announcement stuff, it's really, really big open world type thing, mm-hmm. like The Witcher, but really, really detailed mm-hmm. as well. And because it's kind of cities, really dense.
Yes.
Too.
Well, they're able to do that partially because they're bringing in, and this is a point of contention for most fans, they're bringing the focus, the camera angle in from a third person to a first person. So because of that, the world has to be more detailed. But it also plays into it because then they can make it more detailed and it'll feel real. So it's going to be very cool to actually play that.
Yeah, given the style of game, I would have thought first person made a bit more sense to
Maybe.
Me anyway.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on third and first person? Because I've always hated third person games.
Oh, it depends on
Apart
the game.
Apart from Assassin's Creed, that wouldn't make sense at all. First person, that'd be a nightmare.
So another game that had great music, Mass Effect, brilliant series. Yep. What was the composer's name? Jack White, I want to say, but not the Jack White or Jack Whitehall, but not the Jack White.
None of the Jacks with Whitehall Hall. I can't remember.
But it had fantastic synthesizer music and so on. But that was kind of space Star Trek. 21st century Star Trek, that game was, and it had a third person camera, and that worked. It was a bit clunky here and there.
The camera movement was always weird, especially in 2, with the cover based stuff.
Ugh. But it suited the art style. One of the things that's upset people, I think, about Cyberpunk is that the game is going to be about collecting stuff, sticking it on your body, getting cool clothes, changing your hair color, and you won't really be able to see that except for at fixed points. So I think that's why people are upset, because with third person games you can see that all the time. It's part of the charm, but I just want to play the music, hear the music and play the game.
Nice one. Well, hopefully we won't have to wait too much longer. Well, we're going to wrap it up today, I reckon, and we'll end with our usual thing, which has only become a usual thing since after the last time you were with us, I think, Luke. We just share a YouTube subscription recommendation. I've got mine all ready to go because I've been watching this guy for the last 3 days, basically nonstop. It is a dude from the Australia called Luke Towan, or Luke Towan. T-O-W-A-N. He does a bunch of scale, I think 00 scale model making. He makes a lot of dioramas and occasionally motorizes various things. Does lots of water-based stuff, pouring acrylics and all his weathering. But it's the thing that Pete and I always go for. It's just people who have a lot of skill in a certain field are just sharing it in really long, really detailed videos, and they're incredible at what they do. So Luke Towan does scale model building, and it's really relaxing, because I have no interest in doing this kind of stuff, but it's just really fun to watch.
He does it so you don't have to.
Exactly.
Indeed.
What an age we live in. Luke Towan, if you want to get into some scale model building.
I feel like I've just understood unboxing videos now.
Yeah. I want to own this thing, but I don't really care that much. Let me feel like I have it.
Indeed.
Who's next?
Right, my one from this week. Again, it's from my copious list of subscriptions. Mm-hmm. So this one's called Tech Moan.
Yeah, I know that one.
So this is a variety of subjects. Basically, there's a lot of retro tech, kind of reviews of things from the 70s and 80s a lot of the time. But it will also do sort of things that he's ordered from China. So they do reviews of little mini sports cams and things like that. And curious things, these sort of, what they called, I can't pronounce it, Nixie, these little clocks with the old styles.
Nixie tubes.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Those type of things. So he'll sort of, and it's got to the, as a lot of these channels do, he's got to the point, having enough subscribers, that a lot of manufacturers are sending in bits and bobs.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of things on there. I mean, he seems to do, I don't know, it looks like an average about one a week. So there's quite a proliferation of stuff, and it goes back quite a number of years, because I think I've had him on my subscription list for a long time. And some of the stuff is quite obscure, but sometimes it's quite useful. If you're looking for maybe not the brand X, of a certain type of device, and he'll review something... something slightly cheaper. That
the knockoff, see if it's worth it.
Yeah. So, and it does do quite a thorough job. And some of the stuff is just strange curiosities.
Yeah, I think one of the videos of his I saw and really enjoyed was he did a roundup of all of the post-CD but still disc formats. So, you know, going as obvious as mini disc into some incredibly obscure, strange disc related audio and video formats. It was really interesting.
All the formats that didn't fly.
Yeah. At all. Did the same thing with VHS as well. So you know, micro cassettes, kind of this big, there were some even smaller. It was incredible.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and it goes into that. And there are, I would imagine there's lots of people that collect this sort of stuff. There's always a fascination.
Yeah, just because it's weird and interesting.
But yeah, so that's this week. So that's Tech Moan.
Luke, have you found something through your subscription list?
Well, I'm something of a lurker on YouTube. I have a couple that I could mention, but I think you might have mentioned them before. So first honourable mention has to go to the all-powerful Scott Manley. If you haven't mentioned
him. I don't think we have.
Well, we haven't.
It rings a bell.
There we go. Then we'll go with Scott. So I think Scott rose to kind of fame using Kerbal Space Program to kind of teach astrophysics, really.
That's why it rings a bell.
So you know, he appears to be a, I forget his qualification, but he's a doctor of something space physics based.
Yeah.
And yeah, basically his videos are very interesting little rundowns of interesting tidbits of space news or, you know, engineering questions that people have asked, like how does a bell nozzle actually work? Is an aerospike better? All these sorts of silly things that you probably ask yourself at 3 a.m. when you can't sleep.
And you've been playing too much Kerbal Space Program.
Indeed. So yeah, he just does these really cool videos where he just goes through a lot of this stuff with these infographics and breaks it down to something that you can pass, which is quite nice because yeah. A lot of it is so dense in the literature that you just, you know, where do you start with some of these things?
Yeah.
So yeah, I would recommend him because if you're interested in any way in rocketry or space, he breaks it down in a very nice way and also he's kind of funny. So yeah, in a charming sort of...
A winning combination.
Yeah, nerdy kind of way, definitely.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for listening. Everybody stay safe. It's still a bit weird out there, but hopefully you'll be listening to us next week. This has been Rack Addicts After Hours. Thank you very much. Bye now.